We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
Happy Thanksgiving, Nets fans. We couldn't get two wins in a row, but 1-1 isn't too bad, I guess. It's a glass half full kind of Thanksgiving.
Not terrible performances either. And, you know, we're not thankful for back-to-backs, but we are thankful for all of our listeners. We really appreciate you guys, all the support you give us. And you can follow us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, YouTube, and Dash Radio. But, Jack, we'll start with the Mavericks game. You know, the Nets lost this one 119-113, and they really did fight in this one because they weren't knocking down threes this game. You know, they weren't making a ton of shots, but they gave them gave themselves a chance to win this game. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was certainly back and forth. The Nets went on a few runs, and then the Mavs went on a few runs. At the end of the night, these two teams were pretty evenly matched. And, you know, if we had a few more of those shots fall early, if we hadn't, you know, the Mavs went to the line, you know, and an exorbitant amount of times. We seemed to keep fouling them. And not in, like, you know, it wasn't bad defense. It's just that they drew it. And, you know, the Nets drew plenty of their own as well. So I think if we hit a few more shots early and don't give away as many fouls, you know, we could have easily got this win.
Yeah, there was a, like you mentioned, you know, the refs were calling a lot of fouls, but the Nets needed to kind of adapt to that. And also they did give away a couple bad fouls, which ended up putting them in the bonus, getting to the free throw line. Dallas had 41 free throw attempts, knocked down 32, so not a great percentage, but on the Nets' hand, only 15 free throws, only 21 attempts. And I felt like there was just times where the details and the specifics in this game weren't great. You know, it was just minor things, you know, going over a screen, going under a screen, you know, putting that extra energy to contest the shot, rotating a little bit harder. It was just the smaller details, and that's something you come to expect from a young team on a second night, you know, of a back-to-back.
Yeah, and away as well in Dallas, you know, it's certainly not the ideal situation. You know, Dallas aren't world beaters by any stretch, but they do have a lot of talented guys on the roster. Luka Doncic is, you know, a wonder to watch. DeAndre Jordan has, you know, reformed his game, especially from the free throw line. So, you know, it's not that the Dallas Mavericks are by any stretch world beaters, but they are a very solid team. And, you know, it's frustrating to get this loss, but there were some nice things. If, you know, like we said, we had to execute a little bit better and some of those shots do fall, then this might have been a completely different situation. But, you know, there were some good performances all around. What were some of the highlights for you, Nick?
I mean, welcome back, Alan Crabb. You know,
yes,
very
sir.
Nice to see you. You know, 27 points, 10 of 16 from the field, 7 of 11 from three. And like you and I were talking about before the show, he just had that look in his eye, that spring in his step. He just looked like a different guy. And hopefully this is something to kind of keep him going moving forward.
Yeah, did they serve crab at your household on Thanksgiving? It's not an American tradition, is it? But they might have to.
Yeah, they might have to. I'm going to have to call my mom.
I'm actually a big crab fan myself. I like it with a bit of a brioche roll. It's always, you know, there's some nice crab in New York. We'll definitely have to hit up some places when I'm over there, mate. But yeah, Alan Crabb, it was just, we were talking about it off wax. When he hit that first shot, that second shot, you just like, he's got that sort of glint in his eye, so to speak. And
yeah,
he seemed to have this aura about him tonight. It was like that that Allen Crabbe of old, so to speak. And hopefully this gives him confidence going forward, because he was making everything, you know, he used the fact that he had that threat from the outside. He's like, you know what, I'm going to take you off the dribble here, make a nice little floater. He was hitting everything, and it was, you know, unfortunate that Joe couldn't do it at the same time. But hopefully we get, if when both of those guys are clicking at the same time in the starting lineup, we are going to be formidable.
And even, you know, talk about D'Angelo, he didn't knock down his threes either, and he's shooting a nice percentage this year. So all three of those guys, if they have all pretty decent games, you know, the Nets will be in good shape. But talking about another former Trailblazer that had a huge game, Ed Davis in 20 minutes had 17 points, didn't miss a shot, 8 of 8 from the field, 9 rebounds, 5 offensive. Nice performance from Ed Davis when Jared Allen got in some early foul trouble.
Yeah, Ed Davis knows how to rebound the basketball. He's pretty good at that. He's an absolute freaking monster, man. Like, he's just like every single putback that is there. It's just like, you know, if Ed Davis is under the rim, I give him at least a 50-50 chance of at least, you know, if, whether it's one of those tapbacks or the sort of Tyson Chandler patented tapbacks, or whether he's going to get a putback himself. He is just an absolute beast and force on the boards. It's just added a real element to us. And it got me thinking just like through the game. It's just like, I wonder if Coach Kenny would ever put Davis and Allen out there. Allen isn't, by no means, could easily fit at the four. He doesn't have great switchability, but to have both of them out there, just because I think there would be just this real intrigue for me. I sincerely doubt it'll ever happen. But what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, if Jared Allen were to be able to knock down threes, you know, we saw him attempt two tonight. He did miss, but they weren't terrible looks. I mean, I don't think it would be completely opposed to it, because I think Jared Allen could match up with some fours. You know, he's athletic. We've seen some switchability from him. But like you said, I don't think it's something we'll see from Kenny ever, unless it was some really weird matchup where another team is just dominating inside and they need to do something about it.
Yeah, we always talk about the sort of conservative nature of Kenny, so to speak. But I'm always a big fan of it. Nick, our power forward situation is one that's a little bit sort of tricky. There's plenty of depth there, not necessarily, you know, elite talent, but what are your thoughts on Jared Dudley's struggles tonight?
Yeah, it's just, you know, Dudley kind of looks like he's almost a little bit gassed. You know, he really didn't play a lot of minutes last season. He's already played probably more minutes this year, it feels like, than he did all of last season. I'd have to look that up. But Dudley's kind of just looks like he's, you know, teams are kind of adjusting to him. He had a couple of nice moves, but if he's not knocking down the three ball, it's really hurting the offense. You know, he brings that high basketball IQ. We saw Kenny start Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in the second half. Wouldn't be surprised if he did that again the next game. But what were your thoughts on Dudley?
Yeah, I think if he's not hitting that three ball, Nick, then he doesn't really add much value to the Nets, especially as a starter. You know, I would have Rondae ahead of him. We talked about this again off wax, because he can't hit a three, but he at least provides a real energy that I think seeps through the rest of the squad. He has nice pick and roll chemistry as well with D'Angelo Russell. And I think this was one of his better games, and we can chat about him too. Even Damari Carroll, who I think is still maybe a game or two away from starting. But I think certainly those two will usurp him soon enough. And hopefully we can see some Rodion Skuritz. And Nick, mind you, 2017-18, he had how many minutes in total? He played 686 minutes in total. He's already played 437.
Yeah, and you know, we're not even 20 games into the season.
I know, right? Yeah, it's pretty wild.
I wouldn't expect Dudley to, you know, see big minutes, especially moving forward. And we never really thought it was going to be a permanent thing with Dudley. But like you said, I wouldn't be surprised. We saw Carroll in a couple games. He's still definitely getting his feet under him. It's like one good game, one bad game. But you do see the intangibles. And like you said, I was impressed what we saw from Rondae. You know, offensively, he brought that energy. He did a great job cutting tonight and staying active without the ball. And that's something he's going to have to do when he's not hitting the three ball. Also, energy defensively. He did a solid job on Luka, a solid job on Barnes. There was a couple times where there's miscommunication. But overall, I really liked what I saw from Rondae tonight. It felt like, I've said to you, you know, the most similar game we've seen from Rondae this year compared to last year.
Yeah, and he was one of our most consistent performers last year. He did a little bit of everything, literally. You know, apart from the turnovers, which I think it's you sort of take that some of the times with Rondae. He's pushing the pace so much. He's attacking so much. You take one or two turnovers. Three is a little bit too many, but yeah, he was active on the glass. He made a few dimes, and, you know, he got a steal here or there as well. So, yeah, it was certainly one of his better games, if not his best. Despite the fact that, you know, 9 points, 8 rebounds doesn't look that great on the scorecard. But if you look at the intangibles and you watch the game the whole way through, it was definitely one of his better performances. And I think, you know, he wasn't taking many sort of mid-range jumpers as well. He was just attacking, attacking, attacking. And for me, that's what I think when the Nets look best as well, you know, whether it's, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or our guards as well. But, you know, one of our guards who was attacking and was making a lot of it was Spencer Dinwiddie. He looked awesome. What do you think of his game?
Yeah, this is kind of the perfect game for Spencer. When the refs are calling fouls going to the rim, Spencer does a great job blowing past his defender. He especially like had a little extra edge when he was matched up with Luka. You can kind of see it. You know, Spencer, we know him. He's one of those guys, very intelligent, knows who's out there and what he's supposed to do. So I felt like he did really good. You know, he did have his wrist wrapped. I'm not sure if that's why he didn't play more minutes, but this is a night where I would have liked to seen Spencer get his minutes bumped up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. He's 28 minutes. You know, Alan Crabb was the only one with more with 30. And speaking of, we know him. I personally know him now. Now, the second time I've got a response from Spencer Dinwiddie on Twitter when I was doing one of my game sort of recaps. So tagged the coaches as well. So I'm developing a little bit of rapport with him. Maybe I should slide in his DM soon enough.
Yeah, just mention something about, you know, Dragon Ball Super. You guys might be best friends by the end of the month. But
Soon enough.
But you said it, Jack, you know, 19 points, 7 assists in 28 minutes, 5-11 from the field. You know, he got to the free throw line 10 times. Just a really nice game from Spencer. That game against Miami, too, I really liked what I saw from him. He's really understanding his role, and he's done a good job of knowing when to attack, when to pass the ball, and run the offense.
He'd be a starter on so many teams right now. And, you know, you look at sort of the sort of guys that could be in that conversation who aren't right now. And you think of immediately of a guy like Terry Rozier, who has struggled, as has a lot of the Boston Celtics right now. But Spencer Dinwiddie has immediately adjusted to his new role. In the preseason, we had, you know, very, very minor worries about, you know, his form. And he completely put those to rest within a game or two. He's been absolutely awesome this season. And September 1, first article, financialrepublic.com, you know, sixth man of the year. I think, is he leading that race right now? It'd have to be him and Lou Williams, surely.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty fair to say that he'd be in the top of the contention right now. And he's had, I think they mentioned on Yes Network, I don't know the exact stat now, but he was either tied for the most double-digit games off the bench or like one or two behind. And he's had really clutch performances too.
I remember, I thought he might have had the most at one stage. It's him and Lou Williams. They were both had, like, you know, basically every single game, like 15 games or so with double digits off the bench. And when Spencer Dinwiddie, because he's closing games now, and I'm liking the chemistry that him and D'Lo are starting to form. What are your thoughts on that? Obviously, D'Lo didn't have his best night, but still, he made an impact. And despite the fact he wasn't great in the sort of box score and the plus minus, I thought, you know, his floor, if this is one of his worst games, it's certainly not that bad.
Yeah, I feel like the relationship is getting a lot better. And Spencer mentioned this after, I forget which game it was. It was after a win. Maybe it was against Washington, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they both had big games. But he mentioned how they really didn't get a ton of playing time together last year. He was injured. He came back. They had adjusted the role. Kenny mentioned before the game, he felt like the reason Spencer slumped in the second half of the season was adjusting to that role, and he didn't really completely buy in, and now he's buying in. Then we saw in that Clippers game, you know, Spencer kind of was a little bit ball hoggish and didn't get D'Lo involved. We mentioned it was kind of both them, a little touch of Kenny too, but I felt like against Miami, excellent job from Spencer Dinwiddie playing point guard, getting D'Angelo going, especially when he was cooking. And tonight he gave him plenty of touches in the fourth quarter too, so I think that relationship and that chemistry is just only going to keep getting better.
Yeah, I think it will as well. And I think, you know, with Caris LeVert encouraging both of them, these two are, you know, quote unquote, probably the best players right now and the leaders of the squad. And I think both of them can realize how much they can feed each other and make each other better and elevate each other. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie is going to get paid. Like, if he were to, you know, knock on wood, I'm kicking my table right now, if he were to get injured right now, then he would still probably get that, you know, near $48 million deal that he wants. And D'Angelo Russell obviously looking for that money too as a restricted free agent. So I think these two are developing a really nice chemistry, and it's really fun to watch. The fact that it happened, like you mentioned, in such a quick turnaround, you know, whether it was the coaches, whether it was them having a heart-to-heart, not a lot trickles out from Netsland, but we can judge what we see off the court. And from what we've seen on the court in the last couple of games, it's been good. And going forward, you know, we're going to need it because we've got a pretty tough stretch.
Yeah, what do you think about Dinwiddie going to the starting lineup? Because I think one issue with the starting lineup I have right now is there's no slasher. You know, it's just a lot of perimeter shooting. D'Angelo can get in there sometimes, but if they double him off the pick and roll like they did a couple times tonight, you know, Alan Crabb, Joe Harris is a good driver, but he doesn't really attack above the rim. Spencer doesn't either, but he's a slightly more athletic and kind of blow past his guy with a one-on-one matchup. Would you advocate for him going to the starting lineup or keep him off the bench?
Oh, it's tough because he would be fine in either role. And I would probably say, and it pains me to say it, obviously, because it's Joe Harris, but you naturally would probably take Joe Harris out of it after Alan Crabb's minor resurgence as of this stage.
And Joe could probably handle it a little bit better confidence-wise, personally, I think.
Yeah, I think definitely that's the case as well. And I think that you can throw different looks at it and see how it goes. Whether it's matchup dependent, whether it's, you know, minutes dependent, I think it doesn't really make that much of an effect because, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie's still getting his minutes and he's still making an effect and he's doing so well leading the second unit at this stage. And I think that would be tough for Shabazz to do in his sort of smaller role. So I'll probably keep him on the bench at this stage, but, you know, give him those closing minutes because at the end of the day, that's what really matters. And, you know, I want Spencer Dinwiddie to win Sixth Man of the Year so I look like a freaking genius.
Yeah, no, I want you to get that too, Jack. Do you think there's anybody else they could put in the starting lineup that would kind of fill that slashing role? Just somebody more so able to attack the rim?
It's probably not really, Nick. You know, maybe Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is probably the one that comes to mind immediately. You know, Rodion's can sort of do it, but he's more of just a really crafty cutter in the way he spaces and moves the floor. So I think Rondae and Spencer are the guys at the bench that sort of immediately come to mind. But I think both of those guys are going to see increased minutes as their form continues to elevate going forward. So I'm not necessarily that sort of – it doesn't really matter to me personally as a Nets fan who starts and who and whatever. It's about who sort of is there in crunch time. And I think that's what most Nets fans and Buzz listeners will probably agree with as well.
Yeah, no, honestly, I've never been a huge person who's concerned with starters. I think it's more so about the overall minutes. You know, we talked about that before the season. You know, we didn't really care who started. It's about who's getting the most minutes. Touching on a few Nets who really didn't have great nights, we mentioned Amari 0-7 from the field. You know, Jared Allen had gotten into foul trouble early. It was kind of dominated by DeAndre Jordan. He was just a lot more physical than he was. And then Joe Harris, you know, just his jumper just seemed slightly off.
Yeah, Jared Allen, that foul trouble, generally, it's tough to get yourself back into a game, feel the chemistry, feel the flow after that happens. And DeAndre Jordan, top 10 center in the league. You know, he's still a really, really freaking good center. One of the best, you know, pick and roll threats, especially with his verticality. And I love, you know, how he's reformed his game, especially from the charity stripe. But yeah, and in other sort of terms, for Joe Harris, I think he's still doing all the right things. And he's still taking the right shots. They just don't happen to be falling. And unlike if we were to compare him to, say, an Alan Crabb, the confidence is still there. You can still see that Joe Harris doesn't get down when he's missing those shots because he still makes good plays on either side of the floor. Whereas if Alan Crabb isn't feeling it, then he doesn't really do a lot. So for me, you know, Joe Harris still makes a nice play here or there, even when he isn't at his best and that shot isn't falling because he's still really, really, really good, and I'm always going to be biased, and Joe Harris is a wonder.
Yeah, no, he did still have a solid game offensively. You see four assists, you know, did attack, kept off-ball moving. I would say the one thing Joe had a problem with tonight was Luka Doncic, and, you know, that's going to be a problem for a lot of guys moving forward, but that's not a huge deal. And like you said, Jared Allen, he just kind of was out of rhythm. Damari, we talked about the second night of a back-to-back, but Jack, overall, you know, it wasn't a terrible performance, but what would you say is the main reasons they lost? Missing open threes, you know, lack of detail, pick and roll defense.
Yeah, all those sort of little things that sort of, you know, you need to do to get the win away from home, Nick. The shots not falling and sort of giving away too many fouls and, you know, sending Dallas to the free throw line. You get to get double the amount of free throws of a team, you're rarely going to win. Like, because most of the time, they're pretty easy shots, even for, you know, some of the worst free throw shooters out there. So I think if you're just looking at the pure box score and the team stats, that's the one that automatically sticks out. And yeah, the finer details, like you mentioned too.
Yeah, and I think anytime that happens, obviously, you know, you get to set up your defense, put them in half-court offense. And I think transition D was not a problem for the Nets. There was a couple instances where they got lazy. And I felt like after they tied the game 87-87, they had a lot of chances to kind of either take the lead or capitalize on it. They led with some sloppy turnovers and missed shots, but overall, like we said, not a terrible performance. They did show a lot of positives in this one, and they did almost pull it out on a night where maybe they shoot a little bit better from three. They win this one. Any last thoughts on the Mavs before we move to the Heat game?
No, it was, you know, not the worst of performances, but it wasn't the best of performances.
Yeah, it was just, you know, they had a chance. What, you know, what we always ask for is they give themselves a chance to win. They did have a chance to win. They just couldn't capitalize. And the Heat game was pretty similar to that, except they did capitalize. Huge fourth quarter, 30-15, won this one 104-92.
Man, it was a slog early, wasn't it, Nick? It was just
it was slow.
It was tough to watch. 33 combined points in the first quarter. Most teams are scoring that per quarter themselves. And, you know, the Nets generally, you like to push the pace somewhat. And, you know, at least, you know, they scored 35 and 30 points in the final two quarters, which is essentially what got them over the line. But yeah, it was a real grind earlier. For the fact that the Nets could keep the Miami Heat to 13 points in the first and 15 points in the last, you know, there was something that was working for the Nets that night.
Yeah, I felt like the energy on ball defensively to start that first quarter was great, especially with Dragic being out, Tyler Johnson being out. They really didn't have a true point guard out there. You know, they had Winslow run the show with the backup unit. You know, Richardson did it, McGruder did it. But I felt like that on ball defense was great to start the game. We saw that same defense in the fourth. The second and third quarters when it kind of died down. And like you said, offensively, another game not knocking down shots. Third quarter comes, you know, they start to pick it up. Fourth quarter, they keep that pace, and then they win the game.
Yeah, it was just about a game of momentum, and the Nets kept at it. You know, despite being outscored in the second quarter, 29-19, you know, they still were the better team, you know, quite easily, and they deserved to win this on all counts. You know, D'Angelo Russell had a really nice game. You know, Jared Allen, despite the fact that Hassan Whiteside still continues to get numbers, I think that Jared Allen was far more impactful, and, you know, despite his poor performance against Dallas, you know, he adds value in no matter any time he's on the floor. I can't remember who it was that tweeted out. I think it was GNYR of Nets Twitter was put out the fact, you know, top 10 rim protector and blocker in the NBA, Jared Allen. The guy's 20 years old, guys. I'm going to keep putting it out there. The memes are going to continue. Whenever I'm on Nets Republic or OTG, there's going to be plenty of SpongeBob faces, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. He's so young and how far he's already come in the season. You know, we talked about the Dallas game not being great, but the night before, you know, he's another guy I think back-to-backs hurt him because physically he's just not quite there yet in terms of battling, you know, big centers every night. But against the Heat, you know, he didn't have the best numbers, but his impact was truly felt on the floor. And D'Angelo Russell, this was one of my favorite games of the season from him. You know, 20 points, took over in that fourth quarter, 6 assists, 9 rebounds, but the 4 steals, very active in the passing lanes, and he kind of set the tone. That's something I'd like to see from him every night.
Yeah, and he's taken, you know, leaps and bounds in that area. And, you know, you compare him to maybe someone like a James Harden, who is a quality defender when it comes to in the post, but D'Angelo's activity and his eagerness to want to defend is, you know, half the battle. And, you know, he's never going to be an elite guard-to-guard defender, man-on-man defender, but he can make plays. He can make impact on that side of the floor, as we saw tonight. But he was awesome there. And, you know, we saw, you know, that's the sort of things that we want from him on a night-by-night basis. And, you know, he's starting to sort of bridge that gap. And I think that, you know, in Caris LeVert's absence, he's starting to realize that he is the fulcrum of this team. And he's continuing to do nice things. And hopefully that form continues.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of staying consistent, maintaining this level, you know, keeping that shooting. I don't mind 40% from the field. I don't think that's completely terrible, you know, a little bit better than what we saw against the Mavs. He just needs to keep working on that. I think attacking D'Lo is so much better than settling D'Lo. I don't mind him taking the occasional three, but he does such a good job getting the paint, putting pressure on the defense. I think he just needs to stay very active and attacking. Even against good defenders last night, we saw him do it against Winslow, Richardson, you know, changing pace, using that shot fake, getting himself good looks.
Yeah, when you're attacking as well, you can, you know, allow that sort of element to, you know, impact your game from the perimeter in a positive fashion. You know, if D'Lo can sort of get a pump fake game going, he doesn't have massive speed, but we saw sometimes, even in the Dallas game as well, he's got decent amount of lateral quickness. He has a good size about him and a good strength. So whenever he is hitting that mark, and we know how good his floater is, sometimes he settles for it too much. But when he is attacking, the Nets generally look their best because it sets the tone. When you see guys like Spencer and D'Lo doing it, you know, if that's what your smalls are doing, then you expect guys, your wings are supposed to be doing that sort of stuff as well. So yeah, it was a really nice sort of mentality from D'Lo throughout the Miami Heat game.
And you mentioned it, you know, attacking just opens up the floor from everybody. It forces the defense to move. Now you pass the ball, Joe Harris can drive to the rim, or you end up getting an open shot for somebody. So I think it all starts there. You know, Dinwiddie didn't have a great shooting night either, but he did, you know, still have 16 points and kind of run the show, 7 assists again. You know, not a bad game from the guards in a night where the offense just wasn't knocking down shots again. They kind of came to play and got in the lane and kind of got things try to get everybody going.
Yeah, and you sort of basketball is such an intangible game. Yes, it is about making your shots, but you feed off each other's energy. There's a chemistry, there's a cohesion about it. And once you sort of feel that sort of, you know, X factor, that I'm using all these buzzwords. I sound like a freaking, like, you know, a motivational speaker, and I'm searching on synonym.com. But they were doing all the good things that sort of seeped through the rest of the squad. Even when the shots weren't falling, you know, it fell back to the other end where their defensive energy was still up. But Nick, I'm going to ask you, because it's the talk of Nets Twitter, essentially, where is Rodion's Kuruz?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think, Kenny, they mentioned during the broadcast in the Heat game, Kenny said it's hard not to give him minutes, but he's just not quite there yet. You know, maybe he doesn't know the plays. Maybe he's not 100% comfortable with the rotations or the defensive schemes. That's the only thing I could think of, because I felt like in the Heat game would have been a great opportunity when, things were really dry in that second quarter. Throw him in there, even if it's for 3 or 4 minutes, just kind of get the energy buzzing for the team.
Well, it can't be that hard, because it's 2 games in a row now where he hasn't played him. Yeah. I think that Coach Kenny likes to say a lot of things, and the Nets are always saying everything that's, you know, going to come off, you know, as perfectly
right
media,
yeah,
the right way and media savvy. But I personally would have liked to see him in at least one of these games. You know, back-to-backs is sort of where you want to use that depth in your squad. He's never going to play an 11-man rotation, but and I think with Rondé's form getting better and better, you know, I wouldn't mind some nights if Rondé's going to be inserted into the starting lineup. Maybe we don't have to play Jared Dudley, because we have Damari Carroll. Jared Dudley doesn't have to play every single night. Yes, he's smart. Yes, he can make the plays, but you know, he's been pretty poor these past 2 occasions. And I think you need to reward your rookie when he's doing the right things. You should reward that. And, you know, he's been, you know, I've wanted to see him, you know, probably more than any other player, you know, on our roster. Probably some other people might be arguing for Kenneth Faried and maybe a little bit of Janan Musa. But Rodion's, whenever he's out there, is a net positive. And he, like we sort of talked about when I was waffling on about intangible energy, Rodion's epitomizes that and then some. So maybe in some of these road trips, these back-to-backs, Coach Kenny can, you know, make sure he's got the buzz on wax on the plane and he can listen to our advice.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it would make sense to, you know, rest Dudley on some back-to-backs, even consider resting Carroll on some back-to-backs. I don't think it would hurt the team. It's a long season. They're known to worry about people's health. So I like to see Rodion's myself as well. I just like the energy, the versatility he brings to the team. But talking to Mari, he had a solid game against the Heat too. And, you know, it was a lot better than what we saw against Dallas tonight.
Yeah, Damari is going to have his up and downs as he sort of is recovering, but he's doing the right things. Sort of like when we talk about Joe Harris, you know, when the shot isn't falling, he still knows how to play defense. He's a very capable defender and a capable offensive player as well. Just some of those times when the shot isn't falling, it can get your confidence down the offensive end. But, you know, Damari is, I'm looking forward to see in the next sort of 5 to 10 games when Damari really starts to hit his stride, because I think the Nets should be really, you know, hitting their stride as a team as well at that stage, because like I said, there's a tough stretch on coming up post Thanksgiving.
Yeah, he gives them that veteran leadership out on the floor, and he gives them some extra toughness that they need at times, because still at times this Nets team is soft. We saw Rondé get 25 minutes again, you know, plus minus wise, plus 17, and it felt like he still had a positive effect on the game yesterday too. Really attacking, getting 6 free throw attempts as well.
Yeah, that's what we want from Rondé. You know, if he can get 5+ free throw attempts per night, I think that should be a goal of his, because it shows. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be maybe a stat that I'm going to keep an eye on for Rondé. I'm not a huge sort of stats advocate in a lot of senses. I think that they can be misleading, and that's why sort of I like to watch the games as much as possible, as a lot of fans do. But yeah, sometimes the numbers don't lie, as Mr. Hover said, Brooklyn himself. So I think Rondé is getting some nice form about him, and like you said, I think let's just go with something simple, predicting that he will be inserted into the starting lineup, Nick, and I think you're on the money.
Yeah, it just seems like a Kenny move, and he seems to really buy into Rondé, and hopefully that energy, and we'll get the player we saw last year. And if Allen Crabbe, Joe Harris, and D'Angelo are all hitting threes, the spacing isn't obviously great with Rondé out there, but if they're all knocking down threes, I think it's a lot better.
Again, Dudley isn't hitting threes. He hasn't hit one the last 2 games. And he has been a net negative on both occasions. This is no slight on Dudley in any form of essential form of the word, because like we've said, and I've mentioned in, you know, plenty of Nets Republic articles and plenty of buzzes, he's being extended too much. You know, he's being asked too much of him. Anything more than 15 minutes per night, I think, is too much for Jared Dudley at this stage. You know, yeah. there could be some nights where he's hitting the three or two, or we need that veteran leadership, or, you know, the chemistry isn't right. That's when you chuck in a guy like a glue guy like a Jared Dudley, maybe for 20 minutes. You know, he saw 22 minutes tonight, not tonight, and 18 minutes tonight against the Mavs and 22 minutes against the Heat. Like I said, don't play him on back-to-back sometimes. You know, maybe give him, if you're going to give him 20 minutes plus, give Rodion's 20 minutes or 10 to 15 on the other game and, you know, rest Jared Dudley, because his value is exceeded off the court more than it is on the court.
Yeah, and especially a player who's never been super athletic and he's getting up there in age, he has to put in a lot more effort to defend some of these great athletes in the NBA. But talking to another guy, another veteran on the team, Ed Davis, another big game from him. It's just like every single night, it's like Ed Davis comes to play.
Did I mention Ed Davis can rebound the ball, Nick?
Yeah, I think he might have.
I think I might have mentioned it. Just in case, you know, Nets fans don't know, I think Nets Daily and our boy Flatbush in Atlantic were putting out there, is Ed Davis the best free agent signing the Nets have ever had? You know, off the top of my head, I'm not a I haven't been a Nets fan as long as you, but he's got to be up there. He just adds. So I think Ed Davis hasn't really. He's had maybe one bad game out of the near 20 we've had this season, and there are. I think. We've talked about Rondae last season being our most consistent player. I think Ed Davis has taken that mantle from him, because you know what you're going to get from Ed Davis, and physicality and grunt and rebounding and putbacks. And he just adds so much value, even if, like, sometimes the box score and the plus minus doesn't reflect it. He's always going to impact the team in a positive fashion when he is on the floor.
Yeah, you just know exactly what you're going to get from him every single night. So I've thoroughly enjoyed having Ed Davis on the team. And hopefully, you know, he can re-sign with the Nets in the offseason. Obviously, that's a long way ahead. But any last thoughts on the Heat game, Jack?
Nice to get the win, Nick, because it was probably one of our worst performances of the season against the Heat earlier. But damn, I'm not a huge Heat fan, but those Vice jerseys and that Vice logo, man, that is slick.
Yeah, I honestly hate the Heat because obviously in the 2000s, you know, they beat the Nets a lot when they had Shaq, and, you know, it was just really annoying. And yeah, obviously with LeBron again. So the Heat aren't one of my favorite teams. But like you said, Vice jerseys, fire. Vice logo on the court, fire. But that's all. That's all the positive things I'll say about the Heat. But let's talk about, Jack, what we are thankful for on this Nets team. We'll start with actual players. You know, give me your top three players you're most thankful for on this team.
Joe Harris and his beard. Is that two things, Nick? I just wanted to mention, because I think it was Anthony Puccio, whether it was via The Athletic or Mike Scotto, talking about the story related to how his beard came about, in that his girlfriend was spending some time in London and Joe Harris, you know, had free reign to just not shave. And it happened to just grow organically. And he gave some shade to your boy Karras and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in the wings. It just felt like I just loved this sort of chemistry and everything that was happening with the Nets. So Joe Harris is number one for me, because he's just the love of my life when it comes to basketball fandom. D'Angelo Russell, despite, you know, his ups and downs, I love that we have a guy that we can root for and that we want, you know, to succeed in so many different levels. So it's got to be D'Lo for me, because he has, you know, an ability to drag this franchise, you know, out of the doldrums. A lot of guys aren't sold on him, especially outside of the Brooklyn Nets. But if you're watching him play, he's starting to sort of see those steps forward. And number three for me, it's got to be Spencer Dinwiddie. If the guys responded to my tweets, I've got to show them some love, surely. So, yeah, this season, Spencer Dinwiddie has just been not a revelation, because we saw it last season, but a re-revelation, because he just continues to get better. He is a starting caliber point guard in this league. A lot of people say that, and he has an array of offensive moves, whether it's around the basket or around the perimeter, that would be the envy of many others. He's been awesome, but it's tough to narrow it down to three. Who you got, Nick? I'm sure Karras is number one.
Yes, that was the easy one, Jack. Harrison Burt, definitely number one, you know, for obvious reasons. Even if he didn't have the breakout that he did this season, he was obviously the Nets' best player when healthy. I think at number two, though, I got Jared Allen. You know, the fro, just the ability, the promise moving forward, as you'd like to say, the 20-year-old. I just have been so happy with the growth he's had. And at number three, I'm going to go with D'Angelo Russell. Go ahead.
I was going to say about Jared Allen. Did you see how cute it was when the kid came? When he does.
Favorite ice cream. Yeah.
Yes, it was so good. So, like, painting the picture, and I'm sure Nets fans and Nets listeners and buzzers have seen this, but we have to regale the story for those that haven't. He's obviously doing his charity work where he, you know, goes out and buys Thanksgiving food for plenty of patrons. And he, last season, I believe, was $70, but this year it was $100. So he upped the ante a little bit. And as he's talking to the reporters, Jared Allen's head almost hit the roof in that supermarket, by the way. This kid comes over. He's like, "Hey, what ice cream do I get?" And then Jared Allen's like, "Cookies and cream, man." And I'm just like, good choice. I know my boy Nick Busing as well is a big fan of cookies and cream too.
I like cookies and cream myself as well. It's just a great combination. Oreos and cookies, I mean, inside your ice cream, how could you not like that? And then number two, I didn't even have to mention the part that, you know, both Karis and Jared Allen are great people off the court, already doing things in the community at such a young age. And number three, I'm going to go with D'Angelo as well. Just seeing the young guy have the potential out there and the ability and the flash to really be this great player. And we'll never know if he's actually going to become that great player, but just having the, you know, the hope that he will and seeing the flashes, I think is enough for me. But like you said, it's tough to put it down to three guys. I just went with the top three young dudes on the team, so I made it easy on myself. But I don't give you any shade from picking Joe Harris, your boy, and Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, you could easily throw Ed Davis in there.
Yeah, I really considered Ed Davis as well. I have a thing for Damari Carroll too. I think he's just like that vet on the team and just like what he brings. Obviously, he hasn't been amazing this season, but I just like what Damari has when healthy.
Yeah, there aren't many things to not be thankful for as a Nets fan. I'm sure plenty of them if we had some on the buzz. And if you want to hit us up, guys, at OTG Nick, at the J-Man JBT, we're happy to talk to you or about your topics. We'll probably say Coach Kenny that they're not thankful for, but I'm thankful for Coach Kenny because I think he's growing with our team as well. And talking about our sort of three young guys, I think they have such a way about them that is so marketable in they've revealed so their personalities to us, and us Nets fans have clamored to that in a really unique way. You know, D'Lo's got this swag about him. He's, you know, sort of pretty boy. He's got the fashion. He's posing for GQ. He's doing his thing. Caris LeVert might be one of the nicest people on earth. You know, really, you know, faith-driven, loves his Chipotle like my boy Nick Fay. And we've got Jared Allen, who has a fro that is as gorgeous as you will see, you know, even from the 1970s, and a wonderful smile as well, and, you know, a big gamer himself. So I think that it's going forward as a Nets fan, there are plenty of things to be thankful for.
Exactly. And big, you know, we didn't even say it, but, you know, obviously this was a big, we did a thankful episode last year for Thanksgiving, and Sean Marks was the top of that list because none of this would happen without him. And like you said, Kenny deserves credit too. You hear Nets fans talking trash about him all the time. Yeah, rotations aren't perfect. He's not a perfect coach. He's developing with the team, but we really wouldn't be here without his player development.
No, we wouldn't. And I think if you have to admit that even with all of his follies, he has done a tremendous job in revitalizing this organization. You know, Coach Kenny gets plenty of plaudits from his contemporaries, you know, guys like Doc Rivers, Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich. Plenty of them all revere how Coach Kenny has got. And the way we play, you know, I think a lot of guys talk about the energy and stuff, but I think schematically we're doing the right things. And that has been instilled by Coach Kenny. You know, in years past, we had like guys like Lionel Hollins who would just be stuck in the 1980s or whatever.
He would give you Ed Davis and Jared Allen if he wanted it, Jackson.
Yeah, probably. But he'd probably do it a little bit too much for my liking. But yeah, I think Coach Kenny's done more good than he has bad this season, easily.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a fan of Coach Kenny, and I think some of the shade is a little bit, you know, unnecessary. And I think people think the Nets are a little bit better than they are. You know, obviously, they still need to gel together. A lot of new pieces on this team. Everyone's at 100% healthy. And he just did lose, you know, arguably his best player in the season. So I'm happy where the Nets are. Big thanks, you know, to all the players in the Nets organization, Sean Marks, Kenny Atkinson. And like we said before, big thanks to you guys, all the listeners, all the fans. We appreciate all the support. You know, feel free to interact with us on Twitter. Send us ideas, you know, topics, questions. We'd love to hear from you. And also follow the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, YouTube, and Dash Radio.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.